This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my lawyers. They should be yours. As a best-selling author told me recently, a great agent can get you a contract for big bucks, but it's your lawyer who makes sure that you get it. So, I'm really excited today. I have three wonderful writers in the studio. Last Tuesday, I interviewed my very, very favorite science fiction writer, Mike Resnick, who has won more awards than any other author in the science fiction area. But today, I have in the studio with me three very talented science fiction writers, Bria Burton, Ken Pelham, and Charles Cornell. Hi.
Hello.
Okay.
Very glad to be here.
There is Bria. Okay. Well, I'm so happy to have all of you with me. And this is really such an exciting project that you have taken on. And I know that you have a project called the Alvarium Experiment. And the Alvarium Experiment is to put together writers. So, hi, Ken. Let's start with you. You explain what exactly is this group.
Yes, Alvarium Experiment. Actually, Charles came up with the term. It's Latin for beehive. I would have never known that until
it's
this project
Charles.
Started. But the idea was bring a group of talented writers together and let them go at it and, you know, create a lot of honey was kind of the idea. I had been casting around for a couple of years, thinking, because I've always loved anthologies of all types of fiction, and particularly in science fiction, but I was looking around for different anthologies to submit something to, and then it occurred to me a couple of years ago that, you know, we don't have to do that. You know, with the changes in technology and publishing, how much you can do on your own, we could create our own anthology. So I came up with some general ideas of how we could form a group, and I bounced those off of Charles. I had met him a couple of years ago at the Florida Writers Association conference. His book, Tiger Paw, had won Best Published Thriller, and my book Brigand's Key had one unpublished thriller, so I met him and introduced myself, and we stayed in touch over the next couple of years. And then I bought his book Dragonfly, and I thought, this guy thinks outside the box. So he was the first one I actually wanted to approach with the idea. So I sent him this idea, thinking, he's going to trash it. But he wrote back, this is great, let's do it. So then we spent a couple of weeks coming up with an idea for a story. The anthology itself. We created first how the group would work, and we went from there with the story, and just bouncing emails back and forth, Florida to Michigan, for a couple of weeks.
Well, Charles,
for hours.
You know,
yes.
Of course, I have to say, he lives part of the time in Michigan, so I just love him right away. anyone who is in Michigan is a friend of mine. So, Charles, this is really clever, this whole Alvarium idea. And had you ever done an anthology before?
No, I had not.
So this was something.
And I wasn't a short story writer either. So this was my first short story.
Wow.
And so I had to learn how to do it.
Wow.
And it wasn't that hard once I got involved. But the Alvarium Experiment is the name of our consortium, and the Prometheus Saga is the name of the anthology. We expect that the experiment, which is our author group, will continue to do anthologies, and we'll continue to try to find unique ways to do it. What's different about this anthology is that most anthologies are thematic. An editor or publisher will come together and say, I want to do a science fiction anthology on robots. Anybody got a robot story? And so everybody submits their robot stories. He culls through what's good and bad and publishes, right? Or a mystery or romance anthology. This story is one in which we created a central premise. We tried to keep it as simple as possible to give individual freedom. And then all the authors, there's 13 stories, one author wrote two stories, there's 12 authors. One of the crazy and unique things about it is that we didn't know what each other was writing, and we wrote about the same central character. So when you actually read the anthology, which we've published in a book form, an e-book form, in chronological order, It spans the entire history of mankind, 100,000 years. It's a story about a probe that's sent from outer space. We don't know who sent it. We don't know much about the civilization. But this probe has two functions. First of all, it can morph. It is actually a part computer, part DNA. It samples DNA, and it can morph into a being, and in this case, the human race. And so for each story, you have a different human being that it has morphed into. And then it has a computer brain and a sort of a nuclear heart that allows it to live for hundreds of thousands of years. And it is observing us over the centuries, right from the dawn of time. In fact, Ken's story, which kicks off the anthology, is about it's called the First World War, which is between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. It's the first war between tribes, and the creation of the Prometheus character is one of the tribes people. And it goes on throughout. And so what we did was we threw this idea out, very limited boundary, very simple boundary, and we tried to make it an unlimited scope in terms of the time and history that you could take. And every author came back and said, I want to write about this, I want to write about that. Now, Bria, who's here with us today, wrote about the American Revolution. I let her talk about her story, but a very unique take on this whole thing. Other people wrote in the Victorian times, modern times.
And you did the Holocaust times?
I did the Holocaust times, yes. Okay. And so what we did was the experiment is authors collaborating. So each of us had two editors of the other authors. So there's 12 of us. So each of us had two editors. We did our own cover art. We published each story independently under our own author's copyright. So basically, you can go out there for 99 cents and buy any individual story and take a look at it. That author owns that story, and then we published it collectively as well in an ebook and as a hard copy. And so what was really surprising, I think, with Ken and I sort of marshaling the, he calls it herding cats. But once we did, we found that there was no overlap. Virtually nobody had picked the same story in the same era, you know. And so we then pieced it all together in chronological order, and it goes through ancient Greece, and it goes through the Age of Magellan and all the way through.
Well, I found that it really flows beautifully from one era to another. Now, who did the cover art?
I did.
It's beautiful. It is really fantastic cover art. And, of course, that's on your website. And your website itself is very, very, very good.
We the group came together. I had very initial limited thoughts about what the group would and could accomplish, and they went way beyond that. Bria created a video for it, and Bard and some of the others worked on doing a website, Facebook pages, and they really took the ideas and ran with it. So expanded our scope and our reach greatly by doing that.
And I think, you know, of course, to get to your website, it's, what is your website?
That is.
Do you know it?
That's actually it.
alvariumexperiment.wix.com. And it is really good. It is one of the most beautiful book websites that I've ever seen.
That's very
nice.
Thank
you. I look at a lot of them, and it's really, really great. So and it's very informative. And, of course, let's go back. You know, this whole idea, I love the idea. Of course, you're going back all the way to the Neanderthal times.
Yes.
And I know that recently they've discovered that most of us are Neanderthal, although I've thought many times that many people are Neanderthal.
Our politics speaks of that.
Yeah,
yes.
So when you came out with this idea, it really is so clever. And so you came out with the idea, and then you wrote the first story.
It was a perfect opportunity, because I've always wanted to write about that time anyway, but this anthology gave me really a chance to say, hey, this is a subject I've always wanted to write about, you know, and talk about, you know, the clash of cultures from the beginning of time. And so this was a golden opportunity to take advantage of that, plus to kind of introduce readers to, oh, this is what the storyline is about. You know, this person comes here, he can be killed, but he can come back. And, maybe he comes back in other forms. So we have several writers that used the writer, the character Prometheus, a couple of times at different ages within the same story with completely different characterizations. A male at the beginning of the story, another character that's a female at the end of the story. So it was fascinating what some of the other authors came up with.
Well, and it's important to note that we publish simultaneously. So when we push the publish button, there is no first story. All stories were published exactly the same day, and only two other people in the group knew what that story was. So we were readers, too. We didn't know what the other authors had done.
Wow, that's an exciting, mm-hmm. that is a real experiment. That's exciting.
And it's only when we put the anthology together, because we had no plans to do that. We wanted them independently, but when we put it together, we did it chronologically, so Ken's was the first, but it wasn't, right. quote-unquote, the first. We were all the first. We did it all at the same time.
The combined stories all came out 6 or 7 months after the initial launch. We all launched, as Charles was saying, I think it was January 21st or 28th of 2015. Week. We all hit go at the same time, and, yeah. you know, us 12 yeah. stories appear on the internet, and they're all linked to each other. You can go from one to the other, but each one was 99
and you can,
cents.
And so. We designed it with the concept, the premise, that you could pick any story in any chronological order you want and start reading there.
Correct.
So if you had an interest in, as Bree has done, the American Revolution, or a modern story like Bard Constantine's The Blurred Man, which is really out of this world, you could pick that, and then you could say, well, that was interesting. Now I can go to something else I'm interested in. So you don't have to read them all. You can read them individually. And then all of a sudden, the demand came back and saying, well, I want to read them all. Where can I get the book? Well, we didn't actually have it. We created an e-book through a company called Indie Rights that was able to help us distribute our royalties amongst 12 people. It was kind of hard to do that. And then we published the hard copy through Amazon CreateSpace.
Well, it is. It's a beautiful book with this, as I said, with this lovely cover art. Now, how did you find all of the other people that you because you have a great
Well, after
here.
We narrowed down what we wanted to do with the structure of the group and the premise for the story, Charles and I kicked around some ideas, and I said, I know some authors that I really want to talk to and bring into this, and I contacted them through email, and I think Charles contacted a few through email, and then after that, that was right before the Florida Writers Association conference, so we went there with the idea of actively recruiting writers that we knew or that we had heard good things about, and that's how I had never met Bria before that conference, and I think might have been you that recommended her?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
So, we all called these people that we wanted to go after, like Vic. Vic DeGenti. I knew he'd won a number of awards. So, and I'd read some of his stuff, and I said, I want that guy in the group. So that's how we recruited and filled out all the slots.
Well, when you you have this Alvarium experiment going on, and you're going to write another bunch of, you're taking
yes.
another
we're,
idea?
We're going through the premise right now for another idea. We may be doing a Prometheus 2. That's not out of the realm of possibility. Time is so infinite that we have so many more possibilities of parts of history that we could use Prometheus for. And I think for the listeners, too, you need to understand that Prometheus is a window onto ourselves, right? So here's this alien probe. It's not supposed to have any sort of moral context. It's an observer. It communicates back to its home planet, wherever that is. And it's just trying to learn about us. And so we wanted to make sure that it did not impact history. It one of the rules was it could not alter history. You couldn't have a writer in the American Revolution having the British win. That wouldn't work, right? So what we wanted to do there was to allow them to take the context of a subject matter, like in my case, I took the Holocaust, and reflect our history in the eyes of this alien probe, and in the eyes of the characters around the alien probe, and exactly what the interactions and the plot was of that little story. Well, if you think about it, there's just an infinite number of stories that can be told. So I think we're going to do a Prometheus 2. I think we've all sort of nodded our heads saying,
yeah,
eventually
I'm nodding my head too, because I think it
yeah.
would be fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it is, as I said, I found them, all the stories, just so, so interesting. And you're right. There's so much more to be done, and it's a
There's a couple of
concept.
Cliffhangers where some of the authors say, you know, I wouldn't mind writing what happens next. And in my case, for example, in the Holocaust, it's a bit of a cliffhanger, and everybody, just talk about my story for a second, because it's the darkest story of the entire group. And it's unsettling, and it's supposed to be unsettling because the Holocaust is not something to make light of. But my feeling about the book is that history is being forgotten. We need to find new ways to teach our younger generation what history is about. And particularly the Holocaust and the origins of it. It's set in 1938 and the night of November the 9th, which is a famous night called Kristallnacht, which is the night of broken glass. And it is the historically, potentially, the official event of the start of the Holocaust as Jewish people in Germany and Austria were deported into concentration camps and their businesses taken away, their shops smashed, and their synagogues burnt. So now you have this probe. And I position him as a Swedish bartender in a nightclub. And in comes the Gestapo, and then in comes the SS. And they sort of, you know, as soon as they arrive, the whole atmosphere changes. And from that point forward, I won't reveal the rest of the plot, but he starts to understand what's going on, and of course he thinks the whole thing is craziness. There's an ending to it that I wouldn't mind, you know, forwarding into the future, probably after the war, when the war is lost and he comes back, because he actually joins the SS in the end. Well, my alien probe joins the SS to find out what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is a cliffhanger, and I think you have to get back to that one.
I do.
Absolutely. you know, one of the things that I recently really got deeply involved in science fiction, but I wanted to mention that you do, Charles, you do dieselpunk.
I do.
And recently I was reading some steampunk.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a difference between dieselpunk and steampunk?
Yes and no. The context of both steampunk and dieselpunk is what's called retrofuturism. And the way to look at it is you as an author are going back in time, and you're sitting next to the contemporaries of the age, the Jules Verne in the case of steampunk, and you're writing as if you were in their writer circle back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Steampunk is set in the Victorian and Edwardian ages, and sometime after World War I, we get the diesel era, and that goes on till after World War II. So dieselpunk is era in that sense. And each of those eras have their different aesthetics. So what part of retrofuturism for a writer is that you incorporate the aesthetics, the culture of the time. And what I like to say is you have to be brave enough to see through the eyes of someone in that time. You have to surrender all of what you know happened today. Computers weren't invented. The space race had not started. And if you look back at Jules Verne and his 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, what he thought of submarines and what he thought of space travel and the War of the Worlds and what they thought of aliens. And what you've got to do is start to write as if you were a contemporary of their time, not a contemporary of your time. And so in dieselpunk, you combine science fiction. You can also add fantasy. There's some fantastic steampunk vampire stories, steampunk Sherlock Holmes stories. And then for me, for dieselpunk, the aesthetics of that era, if you think of the 20s and 30s, the rise of fascism, the Art Deco movement, there's a branch of dieselpunk called Decopunk.
I have to read that. I haven't read Decopunk.
The gangsters, the jazz age, the roaring 20s, those kinds of things. And in my case, what I've done is I've written about World War II. I call it a World War reimagined like never before. And what I do is I put, there were no female combat pilots on the American or British side. There were on the Soviet side, not in the Japanese side or the German side either. So I thought, what if, you know, all stories start with what if. What if there was? And what if their aircraft was something like nothing we've ever seen before? So I have an aircraft whose propulsion mechanism comes from Druid alchemy. That's the fantasy part. I have three pilots, all women. I have a Nazi sorcerer who is Hitler's astrologer. And then I have them all do battle in an alternative World War II. I take World War II up to a certain point historically, and then I just change the whole thing. And so it's a science fiction, fantasy adventure with alternative history all rolled into one.
Wow, that's a lot. Well, I have to take a little commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to put Bria in the hot seat over here. And she's going to tell us about what she wrote for this wonderful Prometheus song. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. On January 30th, when best-selling author Tim Dorsey will be signing autographs of his latest adventure, Coconut Cowboy. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. And they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my three guests today, talented sci-fi writers who wrote a book called The Prometheus Saga. So welcome back. I'm going to talk now to Bria Burton, who is one of the contributors, one of the 12 contributors to this very fascinating book. Hi, Bria.
Hi, Patsy. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's so nice to have you. I know I met you at
the Florida Writers Association. I'm the St. Pete Writers Group leader, and a person who comes to the group suggested that you come speak, and it was absolutely fabulous to have you.
Well, thank you, Bria. I really enjoyed speaking to your group, and I just was so happy when you contacted me about this book, because, as I said, I had already booked Mike Resnick, who I love, and who is the, you know, award-winning sci-fi writer, so this just worked in so perfectly to have you here this week. Mm-hmm. And now I know, that you had been writing before when Ken first contacted you about writing this story. What did you think about the idea of a Prometheus?
Charles was actually initially the one who approached me at the Florida Writers Conference, and kind of in the midst of talking to different writers there, and I think he overheard me mention that I had won an award at the RPLA, and that was one of the criteria that they had kind of set a standard of: if we're going to recruit authors, we want to make sure that they have maybe at least won one award. So that was something that he overheard me mention to someone else, and he kind of took me aside and said, hey, we have this idea. And I just thought it was incredibly enticing for, I write a lot of speculative fiction. I have about a dozen or so short stories published. Most of them are speculative, meaning fantasy, sci-fi, or horror. And I was totally drawn to the idea, the premise that they came up with the probe, and just, finding a different different histories about what this probe would observe. And I thought, man, I have this one award. I just slipped in barely into this group. And most of the authors in the group are multi-award winning authors. So it was pretty special to be asked.
Well, I think your contribution is fantastic.
Thank you so much.
You picked one of the eras that I love most to read about, and the Revolutionary War.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us how you picked it, and tell us a little bit about your story, because I think it's just fantastic.
Thank you so much. When the authors had all been essentially in contact once Charles and Ken got us all together, and we were emailing collectively, and we even created a Facebook group that we could, you know, make sure we were in contact and notifying each other of the different things. Somebody created a Dropbox folder so we all would have access to different files together, and there was a spreadsheet of what period in time you were picking. Now, as Charles explained, we didn't know the stories, but we at least knew which time period was selected once an author would populate their selection. So I was kind of observing as these other authors were picking, and I thought, gosh, what time period? It's such a vast, you know, history that we humans have. And then it just one day clicked, and I thought, of course, the American Revolution, and history was actually my minor in college. I was an English major, but I had a history minor, and I've always been a fan of American history, and I still have all my high school and college American history books. and so it was actually pretty fun to kind of go back to that period and just kind of glean. I even pulled out those old books. I did a lot of research to decide where I was going to even start the story, what part of the war. And I was kind of captured by this idea of this potential, in a very concise version, this potential mistress of a, you know, British general was possibly an issue that may have caused some of the outcome of the war. And so it was a lot of speculation that they, a lot of alleged, when you read some of the history about this mistress that, oh my goodness, I'm blanking on his name, the character, William Howe, I'm so sorry. He's a real historical character. But the idea that he had this mistress, and that's why he wanted to continue wintering and not fight the war in the midst of Washington and the men being at Valley Forge, and essentially letting them recoup in a sense. So that idea just fascinated me, and I thought, how can I take this and run with it?
And you did. You created such a believable story. I mean, it is fantastic. You captured the time, and even just the language of the time. It's great.
Thank you. Well, and it's incredible. Charles just informed me, a reader just emailed him a very detailed kind of feedback for each of our stories, and apparently I used one word that was out of context. Oh. The word spritz did not come till years later, so I had used that word in my story, and I thought, oh gosh, I tried so hard not to get out of, you know, context with the wording.
Oh my gosh, but look at your Amazon reviews then, because people will just jump on that.
Right.
It's
funny. You know, it's fun to know that people are paying attention. And
yes, it is, but it's so funny. A very famous author told me she went nearly crazy when somebody did that exact thing, found a word that she used that did not exist at the time. And on Amazon, there were like 70 comments about it. And she said, what is this? What? Get over it. Get over it already.
Luckily, it's fiction, so you can kind of just plug everything into that branch of it. It is fiction. So.
Well, I think your contribution was wonderful.
Thank you.
And, you know, Ken, so all of the people that you selected, all 12, came out with great stories.
Well, thank
you.
You
were lucky.
I thought we were. I was really happy with all the things. And actually, as the ideas started to come in, and they were loading up the spreadsheet with their idea and their time period, I was thinking, damn, I wish I'd thought of that first. So there were some great ideas that it had never occurred to me. And as I said, some of them used the character multiple times within a single story, within different personas. So it was fascinating what they all came up with.
And now, are you already thinking about your next one?
You know, my story ends It's not quite a cliffhanger, but there's a lot that's still kind of question marks that get left on, and I haven't even mentioned the title is called On Both Sides. So the idea that in tangent with the historical aspect, just the idea of choosing a side, and that's where I kind of took Prometheus, where he essentially has the ability to choose both sides, and that's what he does. And Charles mentioned earlier how some of the stories, mine happened to be one of them, where Prometheus started as one person and became another by the end of the story. Some stories, he's one character throughout. He doesn't morph in the midst of the story. But in my story, he does in the middle of it. He starts on the British side and he ends on the American side. So that was very fascinating to explore. So for the idea of potentially moving toward Prometheus 2, and we were just talking about this as well, it's been a little bit of a struggle because a lot of us have all these ideas of where we can take it, potentially an anthology that has a little bit of a separate idea from Prometheus and other anthology ideas. So I think all of us like the idea of heading toward Prometheus 2 eventually, so that's kind of a thing that we probably will do. It's just a question of, okay, are we going to jump on a different type of anthology now, or are we going to move toward Prometheus 2 now? The great thing is that we have the ability to just do it on our own. We don't have anybody telling us what we have to do. We can decide, you know, as a group. So for my story, I definitely could continue where it left off and maybe answer some of the questions that got left behind. I don't know exactly how I would yet, but that's part of the fun of being a writer, is
exactly,
figuring those things out.
You can make it up as you go along. And what about you, Ken? You have any ideas? I bet you're full of ideas.
Oh, yes. I thought we were going with that. But, we were talking about this last night in the show this morning. So I would love to go back to the end of my first Prometheus story and just pick up from that point and show what happens next. But I had several other ideas when I was trying to cast about for my initial story. If I didn't do that one, I'd love to do it, because that one is very lighthearted. I mean, that one, I'm sorry, is very violent and brutal.
Yeah.
I had the idea. I'd also like to do a lighthearted one, maybe where the character meets Mark Twain or someone like that, you know, and run with that and make it add more humor to it this time. But so I think all of us probably had several ideas in the hopper that we.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling you guys together over the years, over the next 20, 30 years, as you continue writing, you'll cover the whole of mankind.
Hope so.
Yeah, it's a fun thing to do. Recently, I had a man on who. Writes a book about presidential elections. And so every 4 years, he comes out with a new book, which is a cool idea, you know?
Right.
So I think that you guys will be able to keep adding to it. And meanwhile, of course, you go your separate ways on your own fiction.
Right.
And I know that, Brian, I just wanted to mention, I know one of your stories, I'm not sure, was it a book, was about your sister?
It's a novella I wrote called Little Angel Helper. It started with a writing prompt, actually, from a podcast that I listened to, and I ended up doing a live blog for about 17 days, and I'd never done anything like that. My blog is more, let's talk about writing versus doing my own writing on it. And I know a lot of writers use their blogs for different purposes, but I decided, hey, why not try it? I hear, you know, some people have a lot of fun with that, so I wrote this story, and my sister has special needs, and I've always wanted to write a story about a character with special needs and have that be kind of the central conflict in some way. So Little Angel Helper was the result of that, and after writing the live blog, just continued editing and ended up indie publishing just this December, came out with the paperback. So,
oh, that's great. That's fantastic. And Ken, what are you working on?
Well, actually, I've got a couple things in the works. Right now, I was working on my third novel, and I kind of tabled it last year to work on some other things. So it's about 30,000 words in, and I want to complete at least the first draft of it this year, but right now I'm trying to finish up a group of my collected nonfiction blog topics on suspense fiction in general, and suspense in theater and movies and TV and all things related to that. So I'm coming... trying to herd those things all together into a cohesive book, a nonfiction book, and I hope to have at least the first draft of that done by the end of this month, and then maybe go back and revise it and get it out shortly. But I'm happy with the way it's going, so Looking forward to that. It'll be, I think, fun to read. We'll see.
Now, each of you have your own webpage, so why don't you, right? You each have your own webpage?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you give yours, Bria?
It's briaburton.com.
Okay, and people can go there and see more about what you've done? And
yes, absolutely. There's links basically to anything I've written, including short stories.
And also the writers group that you had.
Yes, the Florida Writers St. Pete chapter.
St. Mm-hmm. Pete chapter. Mm-hmm. How often do they meet, and what can you tell us about them?
Sure.
Because it's so wonderful the way that writers can get together nowadays. You know, it's just fantastic, and it's really helpful. And I know I met a wonderful, wonderful writer. Well, I don't know what yet she's written, but I just know I like her. Katie Price. And she was so delightful at the meeting. Uh-huh. And I met her there. And she actually called into my show on Tuesday.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And talked to Mike Resnick.
How neat.
And the wonderful thing, of course, about Mike Resnick is he's very famous for helping young authors.
Yeah.
And, you know, helping to promote authors. So I was really thrilled that she called into my show.
Yeah.
She's just delightful.
I'm so glad she did.
I was so happy that I met her at your meeting. So that's
Every month, the St. Pete group meets at the main branch St. Pete Library on 9th Avenue North, and we have a speaker pretty much every month. It's a different speaker, such as yourself when you came last month, and it's 6 o'clock, second Thursday of every month. If you want to come a little bit early, you can help me set up the chairs. we call it networking. And it's been about a year that I took over as the St. Pete group leader. And the great thing about the Florida Writers, just what you were talking about, is the motto is writers helping writers. And it's been true for me, being a member, that a lot of writers, such as Charles and Ken, you know, have helped me, and I've learned a lot being a member. I joined in 2008 and have gone to the Writers Conference in October. It's every year in October at in Orlando. They have an excellent, excellent annual conference. And I wanted to mention, actually, that the awards that the Prometheus Saga has won, a few of those awards were at the Florida Writers Conference. The Royal Palm Literary Award is a writing contest that the FWA puts on. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 of the stories won RPLA awards in 2015 at the Writers Conference. One author has two global ebook awards for her story. It's The Pisces Affair by Decoe. And so, you know, the great thing about coming together and Charles and Ken bringing us all together, and then to have this saga come together, and then to see fruit from it, to see awards from it, as in people enjoying it enough to say this is quality, and to have essentially just some agreement in how we feel about it. So that's, you know, the Florida Writers has been incredibly helpful for me personally as a writer. And I joined a critique group back when I became a member. And that alone, having other writers be able to critique your work has gone a long way.
Well, you have to make sure that you send me the announcement of your meetings.
Absolutely.
And I will,
yes. And it is open to the public.
And when you have speakers, so mm-hmm. that I can announce it.
Yeah, you don't have to be a member to come. Anyone can come, and it's just at the main library, so it's, you know, not too hard to find us when we're there.
Okay, I have to take another quick commercial break, and when I come back, we're going to move Charles back into the hot chair, and he can talk about what he's doing. You know, this half hour was brought to you by Larson & Larson. They're my lawyers. You can contact them at 727-546-0660. And Bill Larson can answer all your legal questions. Meanwhile, here's a few advertisements, and we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida with 30,000 square feet. And over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. On January 30th, when best-selling author Tim Dorsey will be signing autographs of his latest adventure, Coconut Cowboy. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. And they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my three guests, Bria Burton, Ken Pelham, and Charles Cornell, who are three of the writers of the Prometheus saga. The nine others we couldn't fit in the studio today, but maybe eventually they'll all want to come in and I can talk to them about their contribution to this very, very fascinating anthology about a probe who comes from some planet. We don't know where. Do we know where? No, we don't know what planet. And he can morph into anything and carry out all sorts of, get involved in all sorts of interesting adventures and eras in world history, going back how long?
All hundreds the way? Of thousands of years.
Well, when does it start?
40,000
years. So we have 40,000 years of history. Mm-hmm. This is the first anthology. I have a feeling we're going to be here maybe talking about anthology number 10 in about 10 years. How long did it take you to write this? When
the stories?
Yeah, all together, you put together
3 months.
Whoa.
The post-production process took about another month to get everything set up for launch and get all the book covers done and to actually do the website, make sure that when it came out there was places to go and landing pages. Mm-hmm. So it's about three, we gave everybody about a month to write, a month to edit, and then a month to revise.
So are you involved in any book tours? Are you going around to book events? And
A lot of us...
Individually or
right,
as a
group? Right, yes. I was going to say, a lot of us don't live in the same city. In fact, I don't know if any of us do.
No, I don't think we do.
We have writers, some of the authors are in Texas, Alabama, several are in Florida. Uh-huh. So that's, you know, what works out so nicely is that Charles and Ken could drive over from other cities. But mostly we are individually doing, our own. For example, tomorrow I will be at the Gulfport Art Walk, which is downtown Gulfport, just south of St. Petersburg. And I share a booth with an author there. His name is John Regg. And we can sell books there. So we are there about once every 2 months. And let me tell you, when people walk by, it's kind of an art fair, creative jewelry, handmade crafts type fair, and then they allow us to be there as well. And people will walk by the booth and immediately their heads turn when they see the Prometheus Saga on my table. And I just get a kick out of watching that because, as you said, the cover is so gorgeous. And a lot of people love science fiction anthologies and are eager for it. We had a reviewer, Jackie Menini from The Island Reporter, compared it to some of the Ray Bradbury's and different authors, Asimov's, those kind of anthologies that used to come out in the 70s and 80s. And she said, oh, it's like a throwback to these kind of older sci-fi anthologies that she used to love. And that was probably one of the best compliments we could have gotten.
And that is a great compliment because Jackie Menini is, just on her own, she's a very, very talented author.
Yes.
And her knowledge of writers and writing is terrific. And yes. So to get a compliment from her is a big compliment.
Absolutely. She actually interviewed Ken for The Island Reporter. So it was wonderful to have that opportunity to get exposure with her. So.
Oh, that's great. I'm happy to hear that because I really, I think she has her depth of knowledge of writing is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So that's wonderful. So tell me, Charles, you spend part of your time in Michigan. My
Mm-hmm. Well, 2 weeks ago, I retired after 39 and a half years in the automotive industry, and we have a place here in Florida, but we're going to make it a permanent place very soon. This year, we're moving to Florida, to Fort Myers, and Fort Myers doesn't have a chapter of the Florida Writers Association. We have one in Punta Gorda. It's a little further than I would like to go, but I'd like to form a chapter.
I'm sure you will.
I'm going to compare notes with
you. You look like an active kind of guy.
How to run a chapter. So I'm very happy to say that I'm a full-time author now, and it's my passion. It has been for over 10 years. And so I've been stealing time from my company to write my books on airplanes and airports and wherever I can when I'm traveling. And
But they can't take that out of his pension. Oh, you understand that?
No, that's right. And so right now I'm writing the sequel to Dragonfly called Spies in Manhattan. And it takes off from where Dragonfly ends up. I won't share too much about it except to say that if the first story was an action-adventure, this one is going to be more like a spy thriller, more mystery and suspense. And I have two more books planned. And also this year, I'm going to produce my own anthology called Dragonfly Behind Enemy Lines. I wrote a story called The Factory, which was a part of the backstory of the whole world I'm building. It's a world-building activity, alternative history. And it didn't fit in the first book, Dragonfly. So I created this story, and it's sort of novella length. And then Ken has organized a horror anthology that Bree is a part of as well, and we just published called In Shadows Written, and you'll find my diesel punk horror story in that. And what I'm actually doing is writing a whole series of stories about life inside a diesel punk Nazi Germany, and I'm calling it Dragonfly Behind Enemy Lines. So that will come out this year. Spies in Manhattan will come out this year, and I have a couple of other top secret projects that I'm working on too.
Well, that's great, because you do need to keep them coming, and it's fantastic, the ability now on the internet to get your books out there, and to, there are so many, many fans of science fiction.
Yes.
It is, actually, I was talking to quite a few science fiction authors recently, and they're saying, it's not, it is one of the areas that the younger generation, well, I think all of the ones who started with Harry Potter now, they're growing up and they're looking for this kind of fantasy and otherworldly things. And they don't want so much today's history, to even today's thrillers, which can sometimes be really depressing. Mm-hmm. I mean, really depressing if you want, so it opens it up, and I think it's fantastic that there's this enormous market now for mm-hmm. science fiction mm-hmm. and for diesel punk and steampunk. And as I said, I had never really been into steampunk until recently, a few months ago, when I started reading it, and I just thought, I like it. I was in another world, and I liked it.
Well, and being an indie author, for example, one of the things that was like a springboard. Being part of the Prometheus saga and being a member of the Alvarium experiment, having 12 authors market together was like, okay, I've been, you know, by myself marketing my first book that I self-published was a collection of pet stories about my dog and my cat called Lance and Ringo Tales. And by myself, I can only do so much as a brand new author who's just published. And then joining this group and realizing, wow, we are all helping each other. We are all exposing each other to each other's fans. And even just the resources that we've pooled, Charles being able to do the cover art, I was able to create a template for all the ebook short stories that everybody could plug their story into, Bard creating the website. Everybody had something, and often it was several things to bring to the table. And then on top of it, being able to market together. I've been in anthologies where I submit a short story, it gets accepted, it goes into this anthology, and I, you know, it's great to have it in hand, but I don't know these other authors. We're not necessarily connecting, you know, but to have an experiment like this where we're doing it together, we're pooling our resources, and we were just discussing it was minimal cost for us to get this book published from the ebooks individually. We call them the single story Kindle editions, and then go to the anthology ebook and the print ebook. I think the total we actually spent was $35 each to get all those things to happen. And then it was kind of up to us if we wanted to spend extra money on marketing or those types of things. But to be able to, you know, hiring an editor is typically $1,000 or more for good reason for a book. So to be able to
do it together,
and then
teamwork. It's teamwork, wonderful
absolutely.
To have teamwork like that. So now we already know Bria's website, mm-hmm. BriaBurton.com, and Charles?
Well, it's quite simple. It's Charles A. Cornell. You have to put my middle initial in, .com. I also have one that you can go straight to Dragonfly called Dragonfly-Novels.com. And in it, you'll find a number of galleries because I employed the part of Dragonfly is illustrated. It's not a graphic novel, but there are illustrations to Dragonfly, and I employed an aircraft designer and a fantasy artist to do artwork, and there's additional galleries on dragonfly-novels.com.
Okay. Well, I highly recommend this book. I think it's really fun. You can go to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and it's called The Prometheus Saga, and you will get, as they said, individual books, but I get the whole book, and then after that, you'll have all the authors' names, and you can follow them individually.
And if someone wants, if you live in the Tampa Bay area, as I imagine you do listening to this, if you want to come in person to buy a book, I'll be in Gulfport tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Art Walk, and I'll see if I can get Ken and Charles to sign a couple of my copies that I brought in the car so that you'll have several of us
signed
copies.
That's a great idea, absolutely. So I want to thank all three of you for coming in here today. It's just been wonderful.
Thank you.
And, mentioned to you, Bria, that there's a wonderful new place called Miami Avenue Wine Bar.
Yes.
Well, it's coffee and wine bar, I suppose. And it's just a beautiful place, lovely location, just off of Gulf Boulevard. It's ideal for parties. If you're having a book launch, you want to have it there.
We could launch Spies in Manhattan there.
Absolutely.
It's
absolutely beautiful place. And I hope that you'll stop by there and see it. And you'll get an idea of what kind of a book launch you can have.
Absolutely.
Every Friday and Saturday night, they have dancing. And many places have dancing in it. It's nice, it's romantic, and it's beautiful. Uh-huh. Perfect for Valentine's Day. So keep it in mind.
I will.
The Miami Avenue Wine Bar. So this is Patsy with a Z, and I want to wish everyone a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken. Remember, if you need a lawyer, contact Larson & Larson. I love them. And then join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it, and have a great week. Bye now.